This is the Mom Genus Podcast. Two dental hygienists who became friends and later became moms who understand the struggles, the joys, and the self-doubt of raising kids, staying sane, and working. Listen to our regular conversations about everything except the kitchen sink.
Welcome to the Mom Genus Podcast with Christy, Jasmine, and Karen. Enjoy the show.
Welcome. I'm Jasmine and I'm your host, and I have a great, wonderful guest today that I find that many of you will definitely be empowered after hearing her journey. So we would love to welcome Alicia Johnston. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Jasmine. I'm so excited to be here with you.
I'm very excited to get to know you. I really am. I briefly looked over your bio and I love seeing the passion that you have. I've been following you on Facebook for a short period of time and I just can't wait to hear your journey and talk a little bit about what you've been doing in your career. You're beautiful, by the way.
Thank you.
So you're in South Carolina, right?
Yes, I am.
That's so cool. Is it like more conservative in that area? Like, I don't know too much about South Carolina.
It is. Traditional Bible Belt where I live, about a church every half mile, very conservative area, which is a little different where I grew up in Kansas. It was not as conservative. So as an adult, it's been kind of a shift for me, but it's been a nice shift. I like it here.
That's great. And then how is it for dental hygiene? Are you able to do local anesthesia in South Carolina?
Yes, we can do local infiltration only, no block. South Carolina and New York are actually the only two states who only allow infiltration. So I would love to see that changed in the future because any kind of barriers like that are frustrating when you've got patients who require more.
Absolutely. I know we were infiltration for some time and then Maryland Dental Hygiene Association worked tirelessly. One of the guests from the Mom Genus podcast, her name is Marian Mansky. She was very pivotal in helping with that here in Maryland. And we are able to do the IA block only and we're able to do infiltration.
Well, that was just passed in 2016, I believe.
Not here in Maryland, not the block. The block was maybe 14.
Maybe they just put it into play. I was reading something about a state, I thought it was Maryland, this morning actually I was reading about how 2016 was when they actually set the bylaws and allowed it to go into play.
Not for here, because we've been doing the IA for some time now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Not that long, though, compared to other states, because it just came into effect. But definitely, we've had a couple of years with that.
I wish everybody would get on the same page.
I know.
that would be so nice.
It would. It would take a massive, massive overhaul. But anyhow, let's get to know you. So tell the listeners a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am a single mother. I have a beautiful daughter who will be 11 in November, and we just started middle school this year, so life is getting fun and a little bit more emotional. She does gymnastics, and we live out in the country in our little house and have lots of cats and dogs and go to church and do our thing. So that's our personal life.
I love that you mentioned that you're a single parent. I grew up in a single parent household. I often think about how much my mother sacrificed, and I didn't understand until I became a parent how much strength my mother had. Because there's many challenges that come with that, especially when it's a one parent household.
Yeah, it has been difficult. I've been a single parent since the day she was born. So I really had to. Well, it wasn't like there was any adjustment period because I don't know anything different. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I don't know what it's like to have someone get up and change a diaper for me. And so, you know, you just do what you have to do and you decide that this is the most important thing in my life and I'm going to do whatever it takes. And you learn how to carry all the groceries in one trip and your baby. And I do believe that now that my daughter is older, she's starting to understand because I've been able to talk to her about, well, I had to work this hard to do this for you. Or, you know, we had to work this many hours to be able to take this trip to Disney World. And she's starting to see now that she's older and having to go stay at a friend's house so I can go work overnight somewhere. And it's it's really great because she is such an appreciative child. When I give her presents or give her I give her trips as opposed to a lot of material things, and she usually cries just with thankfulness. So I'm really blessed that she is so appreciative, because I know a lot of parents, you know, even parents, both parents in a household, their children don't really appreciate what they have. And I feel like as a single parent, I have the benefit of being able to teach my daughter how hard you do have to work to earn the things that you desire in life, and she appreciates that, and I want her to have that drive. I would never wish her to be a single parent, but if she ended in that situation, I would love to have her be equipped and ready to be able to handle that.
Absolutely. I feel like it's very admirable, and we often don't talk enough about that. And I think when we get to do season 3 of Mom Genist, I definitely want to talk about what it's like and empower other moms or dads that are out there that are single parents, because you need that community support. And just like with any parent, you want to feel like you're not alone, and you really aren't. The more that I've talked to people and I get a chance to interview them, the more I realize how strong and how similar humanity is. If we take away so much of the ugliness that we're seeing on social media with regards to politics, religion, gender, all that stuff.
Yes.
And if you just buckle down to like the core of who we are as human beings, we have so many similarities, you know, if we can get past those things.
Yes, it's really beautiful. And I think as a single mom, I have been given the extra benefit of being able to see that in my community at church. And I live in a very small town with 3 stoplights, so my community is very close, and anybody at the drop of a hat will pick my daughter up from school if I need her. So it has been so nice. And I think some people miss out on that benefit that I get as a single parent, because I get to see the love from so many sides. It's been amazing.
That's so wonderful to hear. It reminds me of one of our interviews we had with Lisa, and just hearing her story and how the community rallied around her family was very, very touching. Let's hear a little bit about your journey as a dental hygienist. What led you to dental hygiene, and how has it worked for you with everything else in your current life? Because you're not just providing clinical care. You have reached out beyond just the clinical care, and it would be interesting to hear how you came to that currently in your journey.
So I don't really have like a moment in my life when I realized I wanted to be a dental hygienist. I didn't have like an aha moment, but I remember, you know, as a child growing up, we went to the dentist every 6 months. It was something we did. I've never had a bad experience at the dentist. I never had cavities as a child. I never had, you know, poor oral health or anything like that. But I always had people tell me that they loved my smile. And, you know, I wore braces as a teenager and did all that. But I feel like just the comments about my smile, I guess it changed, you know, how I felt about myself. And I kind of realized that your smile is kind of the gateway to your personality and how self-confident you are. And I think that was kind of the driving power behind, well, I want to get into dentistry, because it's a esteem booster for people.
Absolutely.
So I went to dental hygiene school when my daughter was a toddler, and that was very, very difficult. But again, I had a village. My dad was there for me. I missed my daughter's first steps because I was in clinic,
which was,
you know, just one of those sacrifices I was making at the time. But I got through hygiene school, and I started to pray about my first job, because in this area, when I graduated in 2010, and there was no jobs. And I know right now there's still a struggle for jobs, but I don't think it's quite as severe as it was when I graduated. Mm-hmm. And so the class that had graduated before us had kind of given murmurings about, well, there's no jobs. And so I had started praying about a job, because I was going to have student loans and a child, and I needed a job. And in hygiene school, we did the Give Kids a Smile Day. We did the sealants and all this stuff. And after that day, I said, I never want to work in pediatrics. I never want to do it. This is too hard. So I ate my words.
I used to say that too.
So I saw a job posting for a nonprofit organization that had 13 medical offices, and they wanted to start a dental component that served children in public schools and special needs adults through the Department of Special Needs. And there were going to be little side clinics, an oral health diabetic clinic, an HIV clinic, a cardiovascular clinic, and it was all oral health related. So I sent my resume, got a call, went and interviewed before this board. And on my way to the interview, I prayed, if this is the job for me, I want it to happen today. And, you know, I'm a firm believer if you just say what you want. And if it's for you, then it will happen. So at the interview, the dentist was very intimidating. He had flown down from Pennsylvania to interview me because this was starting from the ground up. They didn't have any staff. I was the first person that they were interviewing. And he asked me questions about, well, what would you do with this patient if this is what you saw, and what would you do? And I told him some things I would do. And he looked me in the eye and he said, you wouldn't do that if it was my patient. And it intimidated me and made me kind of question, do I really know what I'm doing? And you know, it was a panel of people. And at the end of the interview, the woman in HR said that she would be back with me in the next 2 weeks because she was leaving for vacation and they were not making a decision that day. And I said, okay, thank you for your time. And I cried all the way home. I just sobbed. It was my first hygiene interview. It was not what I expected. I pulled into the driveway at my dad's house and my phone rang. I answered it and it was HR lady. And she said, Alicia, the dentist says you're the one. He's canceled all the interviews. We want to offer you a job.
I love it.
I got out my car and I sat on the ground in my driveway and I just cried because I knew that it was for me, because I had specifically asked God to do that for me. And so I knew this is my job. This is my job. And I couldn't even care what the salary offer was. I was just so excited that this was like handpicked for me. So I took the job and, you know, starting something from the ground up, there was already, you know, bylaws and all that in place, but we were all doing everything. They eventually hired 4 of us total and then brought on someone about 6 months later, but we were all running insurance. We were all checking Medicaid eligibility. We were all calling parents. We were all doing everything. And it was really difficult work. When we started actually seeing patients, I cried daily for months because I was so blinded before and unaware of how much oral health disparity is in this area in children. And it was horrifying to me to see these things because my childhood was not perfect, but I was physically taken care of. I was taken to the doctor every 6 months. I was taken to the dentist every 6 months. I was taken to my physician once a year for my well visits. I had food. I didn't ever have to deal with these things. In the area I lived in Kansas, I never saw that. It wasn't anything I was ever aware of that was going on. And it wasn't just their mouths. You know, their hair was unwashed. They had cigarette burns on their arms. Their pants didn't fit. Their shoes had holes in them. And so I was like, God, I can't do this. This is too much. I am not strong enough for this. I was not ready, but this is what I had asked God for, and this is what he gave me. So then I was able to join the National Health Service Corps and got the blessing of having every penny of my college debt paid for, and I signed a 2-year contract with them. And with that, in the exchange of your salary is obviously at a lower rate because you're working for a nonprofit, but you are getting the benefit of tax-free lump sum to pay for your school.
And for listeners, the National Health Service Corps, you can go on there, you can see job listings. They rank them depending on the disparities in those particular communities. And dental hygienists are eligible to apply for tuition reimbursement. I think it's reimbursement or what have you. They will pay for your student loans for, you know, giving in a time commitment. So that is something that I highly recommend. And they also do that for educators as well. So if you are in a educational setting and you're teaching part-time or full-time and you are working with a disadvantaged group, they also give you that ability to apply for something like that. So that is wonderful that you were able to be a recipient of that. What a blessing. What a blessing.
Yes. And it was fun. When I applied, you know, the paperwork process takes 6 months. You know, you send stuff, you get an email back, and then you don't hear anything for a month. And then you send more information, and then you get an answer, and then you don't hear anything. And so that January, I had gotten the email saying, congratulations, you've been accepted. Well, and then for 3 solid months, there was nothing. And my dad is my accountant, and he called me one day, and he called me in April and said, I don't know what you've done, but you're either in trouble or you've been blessed. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, you need to check your bank account. And they had direct deposited tens of thousands of dollars into my bank account. And of course, I'm a crier. So then I sat down on the floor and cried because, you know, this money. And my dad calls me. I called my dad back and tell him, you know, what it was. And he said, well, you need to call student loan today because you're going to go buy a car. You need to call them and pay off that debt so you don't go buy a car. And I said, okay. So I called them that day. And since during the application process, I had still been paying on my student loans, I actually had enough money left over to take care of other debts that I had gotten. And it was so good. It was so wonderful. So I worked out my time there and then left and went to private practice because I was tired of being broke.
Okay.
And I worked about 1.5 years in private practice, and I hated it. I hated it. I made more money in a week than I made in 2.5 at the nonprofit, but I could not find my place. And I had moved about 1.5 hours up the road, and me and my daughter were staying in an apartment. And I was, you know, thinking, with all this money I'm making, I should be feeling better. And that's absolutely not the truth. And I pulled my daughter out of school in the middle of the school year. I called my best friend. Well, she's now my best friend, who was my boss at the time at the nonprofit. And I said, I need to come back. I can't do this. I can't look people in the eyes when they don't have the money for something and tell them that this costs X amount of dollars when I know that there's a nonprofit 1 hour up the road that can help change their life. I can't do that. That's not in me anymore. Or I don't know if it was ever in me to do that. And, you know, if you're working in a private office, you can't tell somebody there's somebody else who can help you. That's unethical. And I was not going to cross ethical lines. So I went back to the nonprofit, and through that, the second time, we started doing education sessions. We called them Tooth Fairy sessions because Smile Makers had donated 10,000 toothbrushes to us and wanted them distributed. And I said, I would love to be the one to do this. And so I made my little Tooth Fairy outfit and contacted the local schools and set up these sessions with the younger kids. We talked about healthy snacks and when to brush. I taught them the 2 and 2, where they would hold up both hands 2 times, 2 minutes. And we did these sessions, and we distributed 10,000 toothbrushes, and it was so much fun. And I think twice a month I took off clinically to go do this. Well,
that is fantastic.
Yes, it was so wonderful. Well, one of the things, when I would get a child in my chair at the nonprofit, one of the things I would say is, did you brush today? Very simple answer or question, but the answers were astounding. I would get a lot of no's, and the answers ranged from, I was late to the bus, I can't miss the bus, my mama doesn't have a car, or no, because my dog chewed my toothbrush, no, because I don't have a toothbrush, or yes, but I had to wait for my sister to finish using it first. And those were the answers that broke me, because I'm thinking, shame on me. I'm going to spend $30 to get my toenails painted, and this child doesn't have a toothbrush. Shame on me. Shame on me for grumbling that I can't go to Outback Steakhouse tonight, but this kid doesn't have a toothbrush. And this is America. This is America. This is not some third world undeveloped country. And these kids, a toothbrush is such a basic need. It's so basic.
And think about the cost of it. And yet they don't have access to it.
Right. So when they would tell me that, I would say, baby, how many kids you got in your family? How many people live under your roof? You got mom, aunt, whoever. How many people do you have? Because I'm going to fill you a bag. I didn't do that at first, but then I'd have kids come back the next day and say, thanks for my toothbrush, my brother took it, or my mama took it, or somebody. So I said, forget that. We'll just give you enough for everyone in your neighborhood. You know, you know, it's just so basic. And I think, well, I don't think, I know that people don't realize that this stuff is going on in our neighborhoods. And those are our children. They're not someone else's children. These are our children.
Absolutely. And just to piggyback on what you said, you know, I just want to go back, like, this is America and we are dealing with everyday tragedies in our own backyard. And we can see that from, if you have not had the opportunity, which I haven't finished it yet, but if you have not had the opportunity, please read Teeth so that you can understand where dentistry is, where it's come from, and the disparities that many are facing. Diamante Driver passed away from tooth decay here in Maryland, where I live. And no one should be dying from tooth decay. But I do want to point out some of the things that you have said in your journey so far before we get into what you've done with your own nonprofit. But what I appreciated from just listening to you is it's very important for hygienists to figure out in the very beginning what brings them career satisfaction, because money will never do that. You could be working in a situation where you're getting paid buku dollars, and you were getting significantly paid more, but you realized that your calling was out of working from your heart, which is basically, you know, giving to those that are underserved. And I think when hygienists are able to figure out what gives them that passion, they can eventually have more career satisfaction, because there's so many hygienists now that are dissatisfied with their career and they feel that there's nothing else for them. And right. You happen to find yours, you know, and what your calling is. And it's so much bigger. I mean, you really are really making a difference in their lives. So I do have another question, but I kind of want to wait towards the end.
Okay.
But tell me, how did you come about with creating Grace Smiles? Tell the listeners exactly what that is.
Well, so I ended up leaving the nonprofit to work on finishing my bachelor's. And so right now I am working clinically just one day a week in a private office. And the atmosphere is different, so I'm not struggling in this office. And it's one day a week, so it's not affecting my life the way full-time private office was. So when I left the nonprofit, I kind of realized that the educational component that I was having with the Tooth Fairy sessions has kind of died. And the need has not died. The need will never die. As long as children are living in poverty, the need is going to be there. And so I decided to start an organization called Grace Smiles. And what this is it's going to be the same concept as what I was doing with the nonprofit, but there will be no clinical aspect involved. What I want to do is I want to go into first Title I schools and Head Start centers and target, because those are the ones who need the most. That is my first target. And I do realize that, I want to point out that I do absolutely realize that there are smaller targeted needs of children who are in non-Title I schools who still need help, and we will get to them. But our first area is going to be Title I schools and Head Start centers, so we can get to them first. And I want to do free oral health and nutrition educational sessions. And the Tooth Fairy may or may not be there, depending on the age of the child. Mm-hmm. And I've been called out a few times. So my ultimate goal is each school year, I want to target a school district and put an electric toothbrush in the hands of every child in that school district. It will take some years, but I want to equip children with toothbrushes. I want every child in the state to have their hands on a good toothbrush that is theirs. You know, I've been in talks with a toothbrush company who, you know, right now may or may not be part of this, but because someone asked me, why electric toothbrushes? Well, I feel like if you give a child that's something more valuable, they're more likely to care for that item. If you hand them a toothbrush that comes in a clear cellophane package that looks like you spent 2 cents on because you don't care, they might not take the value in it. But if you give a kid an electric toothbrush, they are going to be so amazed that that is theirs. But then, you know, it comes with working out. Well, then these children will obviously need toothbrush head replacements every 6 months, if not sooner. And I want to work out a way to where those will be in the school and the school nurse can have them in her office when children get sick. You know, I want it to be a whole partnership with doing this. I also want to have a separate fund for if there's a need for nutritional snacks as opposed to a fruit roll-up or a juice box, whatever, if there's after-school program, even if it's not in the school, I would like to be able to provide small grants to these after-school programs if they cannot meet the need. Because schools have, you know, a certain regulation of the food and the snacks and what it needs to be. But certain daycares don't have that oversight as much. So they can give a fruit roll up. They don't get in trouble for it or whatever. But I would like to have that funds. And then going forward with the high school students, I would like to host an annual table clinic where I invite high risk seniors in high school to complete an oral health education poster research project or on nutrition and how it affects your oral health. And I would like to give a high-risk student college scholarship. And right now my goal, the first year, the goal is going to be $1,000, but I would love to either increase that amount or spread it out to where there's the second year, two students will get $1,000. Because if you have nothing, $1,000 will tremendously help you. And I also want to give the encouragement that you can go to college. Right. And, you know, it doesn't matter if you're going to a trade school to become an electrician. Electricians are needed just as much as doctors are. Yeah. You know, both ends of the spectrum are needed. So you don't have to go to a state school for, you know, for whatever. I want to encourage kids, if you want to go to cosmetology school, I want to give you $1,000 to do that. I want kids in this area to know you can get out of your neighborhood, you can get out of your situation, you can do all these things, and I want to equip you with the first boost you need. So it's a lot of things that's going to be going on, and obviously it's going to take years before we get to our full potential of what we can do. Well, it may not. I may have somebody who hears this and would love to contribute or partner, and they contact, and it may hit the ground running soon. But right now we're definitely in the beginning stages, working on getting, you know, the list of Title I schools and making a calendar out on who will receive toothbrushes first based on needs and, you know, DHEC's reporting of the oral health disparities by county and what that looks like. It's astounding how many children in this state are living below poverty level.
You're living through, you know, your passion, and it's helping you to strive for excellence in all that you do. I can hear that passion in you. So what advice could you give for a hygienist who just feels like they're stuck, or, you know, they don't know which route to go in order to feel as impassioned as you are right now?
Our biggest problem is fear, because so many of us need that paycheck. And I absolutely understand. I'm a single mom. Of course, I need a paycheck. It's not just about wanting to get stuff. It's, I have a mortgage. I have a child. I need a paycheck. And, you know, it took a little while of me swallowing my pride. And I was 28 years old living with my dad, because, you know, you have to be able to make sacrifices. You have to decide. I see on all these Facebook groups of people who go in every day to an office that makes them miserable for one reason or another, something the front office does or something the dentist does or something, just the way something runs. And I want to encourage people to not settle. Don't settle. If the office is not for you, you know, there's a large number of hygienists who are made for clinical hygiene, and they're great at it. And that is their thing. But if you are unhappy where you are, like your office, network, start a study group with other hygienists, because the best way to find a job is word of mouth. That's something I didn't mention is, right now I'm also a clinical rep for Young Dental, and I got that job word of mouth. Somebody saw a post on Facebook and called me and said, "Oh my gosh, you already do Tooth Fairy sessions. Why don't you do something like this too? This sounds great." I wasn't even seeking that out. That was something that came to me because people were seeing other things I was doing. So I want to say, get involved with ADHA, get involved with a local study group. If there's not one, start one. There's thousands of articles online about, you know, new topics, the gingivitis code. There's a lot of people who post daily questions about it. So why not get the research together yourself, start a study group, invite 5 or 10 offices in your area and have them meet for dinner one night. It's just, you have to put in work. And it's so easy to sit in a place where you're miserable and complain about it. But complaining does nothing but irritate the people around you, and it makes people not want to hire you. Because people can tell if, you know, if a hygienist sees you saying something about how awful your life is at this job, and she knows that her office has an opening, she's not going to want to even tell you about the job because she's just seen you complain about something else, and nobody wants to work with a complainer.
Right.
I know it's difficult, and I feel so very fortunate that things have really just kind of fallen in line for me. I know everybody on this earth has a purpose, one way or another. If clinical hygiene is someone's purpose, then find the spot that makes you happy, because when you interview at an office, you're interviewing them just as much, if not more, than they are interviewing you. And I want to make sure that hygienists understand that. This is about finding a place that you are going to spend more time at than you will with your own family. And it is so important you find a place that fits you. And if it means you have to bounce office to office for a little while, or temping is a great way to find an office that you would like.
Absolutely. So what's the best career advice you've been given?
Well, I actually met face-to-face Elijah Desmond recently. And, you know, we've connected on Facebook before. I think, you know, a lot of hygienists have connected with him. But we were having dinner, and I remember him just encouraging me. And, you know, his spirit is so uplifting. Just being around him, you can feed off of his energy and get empowered. And I remember him saying, get uncomfortable. Go for it. Because I was still kind of tossing around the nonprofit, and I was still kind of tossing around how I wanted to do some writing and this, that, and the other. And he basically said, what are you waiting for? Get uncomfortable. Make yourself uncomfortable, because when you get uncomfortable, that's when changes are made. And just this past weekend, my nonprofit raised $600 because I got uncomfortable enough to start asking people for money. It is so hard to ask people for money.
It is.
And especially people I know, and I feel like I've been blowing my Facebook up with post after post after post. But, you know, it's like I want people to understand that $5 can change someone's life. He kind of hit the nail on the head that night when he was like, what are you waiting for? Your life is going to pass you by, and you're going to be sitting in a career that you're unhappy with. And I think there's a lot of people sitting there right now, and it's really sad, because life is way too short to be wasting your time somewhere that isn't fulfilling.
Absolutely. So my next question to you is, what was the last book that you read?
Well, all of the books I read right now are religious books. And so I'm actually reading a book right now called Lady in Waiting. And it's about becoming your best while you wait for other things in life. I like books that have journaling aspects to it, too. That way I can actually read and then process and then spit back out what I learned. Because if I don't spit it back out, then I didn't learn it. And so my faith is a big part of who I am and a big part of what drives me. Because I believe that as a Christian, my job is to serve the underserved. That is what I firmly believe my purpose is. So I do a lot of reading like that. But I, as goofy as this sounds, I read a lot of textbook stuff. I like to read statistics and facts.
You're a dental nerd, and that's okay. Most of us are.
I am. That's what I was reading this morning when I was working on stuff for this nonprofit. And I pulled it up while we've been on this call. But I read that in the state of South Carolina, 430,000 children live below 200% of the federal poverty line.
Wow.
See, that's that sentence right there is what motivates me.
Yeah.
So I read a lot of this stuff because it's, I hate to say it's food for my soul, but it is, because it reminds me when I can't get someone to email me back, or I can't get through to the IRS or whatever is going on, that there are 430,000 children who are at high risk for oral disease and untreated decay, at least. Those are just the reported numbers. That's in my mind, that's the minimum number that was reported. So I wish I had a good book recommendation for you.
No, that's fine. I think that's great. It gives someone else an opportunity to look it up. I feel that with career satisfaction, you have to have personal development along with that. People think that, you know, when it comes to your career, everything should be separate. And I have found that when I'm not taking care of myself personally, it affects everything else in my life. And so
Right.
You have to constantly feed your mind with positive things, whether that be what speaks to you religiously or meditation, mindfulness of some sort. I highly, highly, highly believe in that. This morning I read a scripture, so, and I meditated on that, and it helps keep me sane and helps keep me in check. And when I'm not doing it, I lose so much of myself and then I can't focus. So I have to
and
do that.
And easily exhausted.
Yes.
When you're not, you have to keep yourself high on the totem pole. And I have learned that. I have ran myself into the ground enough times to know I'm not number one, but I'm close up there.
Yeah, absolutely. So if listeners are interested in getting in contact with you, what's the best way?
I think like anybody else, Facebook is great. I'm still in the works of making websites and that kind of stuff.
Okay.
But I'm always open to connect on Facebook. And I would love for anybody listening to follow my nonprofit's Facebook page. It's called Grace Smiles Nonprofit. I would love for people to follow us on this journey and just see the impact that it's making. Because I feel like the more people see the impact, the more people are going to be willing to give. And like I said, asking for money is hard. So I think when people see that their money is changing someone's life, and I firmly believe that giving a child a toothbrush will change their life. I firmly believe that.
Yeah, absolutely. So what I'll do is I'll put the link for your Facebook page in the show notes. It would also be in the blog that I use to cover this episode. That will be in there. And then listeners will be able to get in contact with you. I love what you're doing, Alicia. Keep moving forward. I can't wait to watch and see all that you accomplish. I can feel your energy and your passion, and I love your commitment to really making a difference. It helps me realize how important it is for me that even in the times where I feel uncertain if I'm doing the right thing, to stick with what empowers me and will empower the population that I am passionate about. So I really appreciate you for coming on the show today and giving me the opportunity to interview you.
Thank you for having me, Jasmine. It's been wonderful.
So I will definitely have you back.
Sounds great.
Don't forget to subscribe
and
leave us a review.
Thank you. You too.
Like us on Facebook. See you next.